Looking at our world from a theological perspective. This is the Theology Central Podcast, making theology central.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is Monday, October the 11th, 2021. It is currently 4:42 p.m. Central Time, and I'm coming to you live from the empty sanctuary of Victory Baptist Church, located right here in Ovalle, Texas. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am excited to be here. The plan wasn't to be here today, but I received an email, and as soon as I saw the email, I'm like, okay, I have to pack everything up and drive back to the church because this is awesome. One of the things I absolutely love about doing the Bible study exercise podcast series is that we have basically kind of formed a little small group, a small community of people who are actively participating in the Bible studies, and they're sending in their homework, they are offering their thoughts, their perspective, their opinion. And I absolutely love that because I've tried to say it many times. I try not to view the Bible study exercises like, okay, I'm going to sit here and formulate the lesson and I'm just going to teach it. But I try to come at this like we're fellow classmates and we're all in this together and we're all studying it together. We're asking questions. We're putting forth ideas and theories and our own thesis, our own hypothesis. And then we're testing it and challenging it, trying to figure out, okay, could this be right and this right? I do some teaching, but I do a lot of asking questions and a lot of just trying to like lead you to a certain point and then just hand it over to you and see what you can come up with. And then when I get that response from you, I'll be like, oh, wow, that's really good. Or, whoa, that I never even thought about that. And it really just adds to this like ongoing, not only ongoing study, but it's an ongoing learning process. And I cannot stress how important it is to always remain teachable as a Christian. If you ever reach a point where you think you've got it all figured out, you have all the answers, that I know you would never say this about yourself, but you almost begin to act like you're infallible. Well, there can be no more growth. There can be no more correction because you think you've already got it figured out. Now, I am very aware that yes, sometimes when I teach and sometimes when anyone teaches, you've got to say, this is what I believe, and you have to teach it like this is the truth, and anything that deviates from it is error. Yes, there is a need for that within Christianity. But in the process of doing that, at the same time, you have to maintain a certain level of humility to be willing to go, okay, but all right, I know I taught that as being very dogmatic, but I'm always willing to have that challenged. And every day you study, you set aside your previous conclusions and you relook at everything and you retest everything. That's the only way you can ever grow. That's the only way you can ever correct wrong understanding. So a common thing I say here is yesterday's conclusion is of no value today. Yesterday's understanding is of no value today because when you open up the text today, you study it anew. That's why I never rely on old notes. I don't use any old notes in any preaching, any teaching, anything. I don't care how good my notes may have been. Is the goal when you preach, teach, is the goal to continue learning, or is it simply to have a sermon ready? Is it simply, when you're in ministry and all you're really doing is just trying to have a sermon ready, all you're trying to do is have another Sunday school lesson ready, if that's all you're doing, then you need to get out of ministry because ministry should be about, no, we're still learning, we're studying. It's not about just having a sermon. It's about engaging in meaningful study of the text. It's easy to write a sermon where you have your introduction, you have your body, usually 3 or 4 points, you have your conclusion, and you just put it together, and then you stand there and you just preach it. But it's not just about standing there and having your 3 points. It's about we're standing here and we're going to engage in serious, serious Bible study. So that's what I try to do, and you're a vital part of that. Your discussion and your ideas and your perspective will then challenges me. And we have a perfect example of a listener today absolutely throwing a great idea at us. And so I'm going to put it forth to all of the rest of you who are actively involved and to anyone else who's just listening. And I cannot wait to see what you do with this and what you have to think about it. But we always have to remain humble and willing to change and be corrected. We have to maintain that teachability. I can't remember if it was in a Bible college or a Bible institute, but someone demonstrated it this way. They had a glass of water that was completely full, and then they had like a bottle of water, and they tried to pour more water into that glass. Well, it was already full, right? It was already full. So it just overflowed, And they're like the point that we're trying to get is if you sit here and you think you've already got it figured out and you're so full of your own thoughts, your own conclusions, and you're full of yourself, I can't pour anything else into you. Well, as a Christian, nothing else can be poured into you if you are not teachable. Teachable means that you're not so full of yourself. You're not so full of your own thoughts and your own conclusions. You're willing to hear and go, well, okay, wait, what about this? And what about this? And then you work through it. Now, you still may come to the conclusion that what's trying to be offered to you is wrong, and that's okay. That's okay. Some people try to think that, you know, to not be, how can you say it? That to be conservative and fundamental is to be dogmatic and to say you're right. And to be, if you think that you can learn and possibly change your mind, somehow it is almost associated in some people's mind as being liberal or being wishy-washy. Like it's not, no, it's about remaining teachable. Yeah, I still want stuff to be poured into me. So whenever I get an email from anyone, I'm always willing to go, whoa, that's an interesting perspective. And I'm willing to work through it. Now, I may work through it. And when I'm done, say, I think this is an absolutely wrong idea. I got no problem doing that. But that's the way. But at the same time, I'm going to challenge myself. So please remain teachable. Please remain humble. One of the things, sometimes those who study the Bible the most, sometimes what happens is we develop a prideful, arrogant attitude. I've talked about what happened to me early on in my Christian life. And so just remain humble. And I'm just so glad that in the Bible study exercise, we have a group of people out there who are studying, asking questions, working on things. And I think we've got a lot to do this afternoon. And hopefully this is going to be very beneficial to you. I know I kind of started preaching before we get to this, but okay. So welcome everyone. Bible study exercise, 1 John. That's what we've been working on now for a couple of weeks. We're still working on it. I gave you some assignments yesterday and someone already got started and asked some amazing questions. So are you ready? Let's go to one of the first assignments I gave you for this week. 1 John chapter 2, I'm going to read verses 15 through 17. Now, I really thought, that's another reason I love doing the Bible study exercises, because I always have an idea, I think this is where the focus is going to be, but you can change that with your email. And so every week of Bible study, it's very organic. It kind of just develops, and it kind of goes in whichever direction it takes it. And I like that. I don't like it having it all outlined and ready to go. I like to be very open to the questions you're having, the struggles you have, what you're discovering, what you're finding, and what I'm discovering and finding in my own study. And then sometimes the study just goes a certain direction. And you know what? I just let it go that way. We just follow it. And so that's what we're going to do this week. Because I really thought the focus would be on 1 John 2:18, which mentions Antichrist and Antichrists. And I thought, okay, this is going to get into a big discussion about, okay, Antichrist one, Antichrist many. All right, who are the many Antichrists? Is there one Antichrist? How do we understand Antichrist? And I really thought that was going to lead to all kinds of discussion. It still may, but the email I received wasn't about Antichrist. It was about 1 John 2, 15 through 17. And I really appreciate this because I think this is a very interesting possibility, a very interesting theory, hypothesis, and I'm going to put it to you, and I can't wait to see what you come up with in your study. And we're also going to do a little Greek study here as well, so it should be fun. All right, I hope you're ready. Here we go. 1 John chapter 2, verse 15. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Now, this week, one of the things I wanted you to do is spend a lot of time trying to figure out what it actually means to love not the world. What does it mean for you not to love the world? What does that actually look like? And remember, I told you to look up in the curriculum. I told you to look in commentaries, look anywhere and everywhere. But also, I wanted you to just write down how you would define it. And then I wanted you to talk to as many other Christians that you know to ask them what they think love not the world looks like. What does it mean? And I want to compile all of that. And I'm still hoping people will do that. But it's a tough thing to answer. Love not the world. Okay, what does that look like? What does it mean? Let me give you an example. Earlier this morning at 11:40 a.m., I was sitting inside of a movie theater for the latest James Bond movie. And I watched the whole thing. And I could tell you everything about it. And we could have a discussion. But was that loving the world? Many people would say it is. Many people would say it's absolutely wrong. You should have never watched that. You should have never seen. You should have never looked at it. And they would make their argument that that's worldly. You're loving the world. Others would say, well, no, you couldn't go watch James Bond, but they would name some other movie that would be perfectly acceptable to go watch. You could say, I watch this TV show, and some Christians would say, no, that's worldly, but then they watch other TV shows. And at times, it's maddening. And what happens is because there's so much disagreement on what it means to not love the world that I think we all just kind of find our where we're comfortable and we just live our lives never really asking, what does this actually mean? And how does this negatively impact my spiritual growth? So what does it mean to love not the world? Very important question. And I'm going to get to this email because they offer a very interesting theory. All right. So let's get to the email here. All right. This is really, I think, very interesting. I received this at 8:30 this morning. I'm just now listening to your broadcast from last night. Before I get going on this, it led me to just a general question on the different Greek words translated as love. Some preachers make a big deal of that. Others have dedicated entire sermons to pointing out that they are used interchangeably and shouldn't give so much notice to it. Now, that's a very important question. Now, as soon as I saw this, I'm like, oh, I think I know where he's going. I think I know where he's going because in 1 John, we have this idea of love, right? Love, not the world. Well, we need to understand, how do we understand the Greek words that are translated love? What Greek word is used here for love? Now, this is an interesting question. This started, I like, okay, which direction is he going to go with this? So he continues in the next paragraph. For instance, you've probably noticed towards the end of John, when Jesus asked Peter if he loves him, and they go back and forth three times, Jesus uses agape the first two times, and Peter always responds with a phileo. The third time Jesus asked the question, he uses phileo in his question instead of agape. Is there something to that, or are we letting it be a bad distraction from the main point? I've heard preachers say both. Now, right here, first of all, one of my major frustrations with Christianity is how can you have a passage where you have some different Greek words and preachers cannot agree on whether it's significant or not significant. We can't even agree on, so is this important or not important? So this is what we're going to do. We're going to go to John, Gospel of John, chapter 21. John chapter 21. And we're going to start in verse 15, because this is the famous passage. And this, I know you're saying, but we're not in 1 John. I understand that. Just stay with me. This is all going to make sense. John chapter 21, verse 15. So when they had dined, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? He saith unto him, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, feed my lambs. So let me read this again. John chapter 21, verse 15. All right. I'm sorry. My reading there was not very, very good because my brain is already trying to process some things here. So I'm already thinking ahead of what I'm speaking. All right. So now I need to get my mind and my mouth in the same gear here. Okay. Here we go. John chapter 21, verse 15. All right. So when they had dined, Jesus saith unto Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? He saith unto him, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, feed my lambs. He saith to him again the second time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? He saith unto him, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, feed my sheep. He saith unto him the third time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Peter was grieved because he said unto him the third time, lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus saith unto him, feed my sheep. Now, there have been probably millions of sermons preached on this section of scripture. Obviously, it's a very important scripture because Peter denied Jesus three times. Now, Jesus, in a sense, goes through a three-step process to restore. Peter had denied Jesus three times. Now, Jesus goes through a process, a three-step process, to restore Peter back to a position of usefulness so that he can still be used and minister for Christ, right? It's a beautiful picture. We could talk about the importance of restoration. There's so much we could talk about, but there is a lot of discussion. You'll hear this in seminaries, Bible college, sermons, podcasts, about the different Greek words used in this section for love, all right? Or lovest thou me, Lord, you know I love you, all the different use of the Greek words here. And so a lot of people think there's something very significant going on. Some people say, no, they're just used interchangeably. It doesn't really matter. You can draw your own conclusion, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to walk through this looking at the Greek words that are used here, all right? And you can use the same tool if you want. You can download the Blue Letter Bible app. It's free, and that's what we're going to use. So I'm going to open up the Blue Letter Bible app. I'm going to go to John chapter 21, and I'm going to just tap on the screen on verse 15, all right? Because verse 15 says, so when they had dined, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? He saith unto him, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, feed my lambs. All right, so I'm going to tap on verse 15, and I'm going to pull up the interlinear. All right, once I pull up the interlinear, I'm going to go down here to the first time that Jesus speaks and says, Simon of Jonas, lovest thou me? Now, if you look up lovest thou me, the lovest there is this Greek word.
Strong's G25, agapao. Agapao.
Agapao or agape. I think some people call it agape. Agapao is the actual Greek way of speaking it. The transliteration if I can speak the word correctly today. Let's listen to it one more time.
Strong's G25. Agapao. Agapao.
Agapao. Is if you, the transliteration is actually spelled A-G-A-P-A-O, so agapao. It is a part of speech. It's a verb. It's used 142 times. It's used 142 times. It's translated love 135 times. It's translated love or beloved 7 times. Strong's definition, agapao, if I can speak it correctly, is to love in a social or moral sense, be loved, all right? It's used, its outline is of persons, to welcome, to entertain, to be fond of, to love dearly, of things, to be well-pleased, to be contented at or with a thing, all right? So I'll let you hear it one more time.
Strong's G25, agapao, agapao.
Agapao, all right? Now, it's used, you can go through all the different times that it's used. Agapao is used in like Matthew 5:43. You've heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy, Matthew 5:44. But I say unto you, love your enemies, Matthew 5:46. For if you love them, which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? All right. So there's the first one that's used in John chapter 21, verse 15. One more time, It is this.
G25, agapao, agapao.
Agapao, all right? So it uses agapao, just so that you know that. A lot of people say the first one is agape, but it's agapao is the actual word. And it's used in a lot of, I mean, it's used, the difficult thing here, it's used 142 times. So you're going to have to go through every single occurrence where it's used and go, okay, what does this actually refer to? What actually is being said here? All right, and let me just, again, give you the basic definition. Agapao is to love in a social or moral sense, to be loved. And it can be used to speak of persons, to welcome, to entertain, to be fond of, to love dearly, of things, to be well pleased, to be contented, or with a thing. So if we read agapao right there in John 21:15, then we could read it this way. So when they had dined, Jesus saith unto Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, agapao me? Agapao me? Do you have a welcoming, entertaining, attaining, fond of, love dearly kind of love for me? All right. Now, Peter responds, if you look at the text, he saith unto him, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. You know that I love thee. Now, what love? Does Peter use the same word? Does he use the same word, agapao? Does he use the same word? Well, let's look at it. I'm going to pull this up. Let's see. Lovest thou me, agapao? And then you go down here. Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love. And look at the word that's used here. It's not agapao. He uses this word.
Strong's G5368, phileo. Phileo.
He uses phileo, all right? I think I may have said philo. It's phileo. I don't know how I think I said phileo. Maybe I said it incorrectly the first time when I was reading the email, but it's a phileo, all right? Now, phileo is used 25 times. It's translated love 22 times. It's translated kiss 3 times. Phileo means to be a friend, have affection, denoting personal attachment as a matter of sentiment or feeling. It's a wider embracing, especially the judgment, the deliberate assent of the will as a matter of principle, duty, and propriety. The two thus stand related very much to some other Greek words. One can formerly be chiefly of the heart and the latter of the head, especially to kiss as a mark of tenderness, to kiss or love. It's outline of biblical usage, to love, to approve of, to like, to sanction, to treat affectionately or kindly, welcome, befriend, to show signs of love, to kiss, to be fond of doing, be want, use, to do. All right. If we look at all the verses where it's used, you can just look at all the different places that it's used. I mean, it's 25 times you can look. So let's go through these again. So in John, and the first verse, John 21, verse 15, I'm going to go back here to the interlinear so that we can just keep this straight. All right. Here, Jesus, after they dine, right, he looks to Simon Peter and he says, Simon of Jonas, I'm reading from the interlinear, and he says, lovest thou me? When Jesus asked Peter the first time, do you love me? Lovest thou me? He uses this Greek word.
Strong's G25, agapao. Agapao.
Agapao. That's the word he used. Peter responds by not saying, I agapao you. He does not respond that way. And Peter responds by saying, Lord, you know. Right. In fact, he goes on to say, Lord, thou knowest that I love. And he uses this word.
Strong's G5368. Phileo. Phileo.
Phileo. Phileo. I tend to say phileo, I think is how, I don't know. I learned it so many different ways, but phileo, I think is just the easiest way to say it. I had at least in one school, they stated it really a weird way, but phileo is the right way. I think they went phileo. They tried to really break it down. Phileo, I think is the best way to say it. All right. So if I revert back and forth, I apologize for that, because you learn it one way, then you hear it a different way. And as soon as you hear it a different way, you want to revert back to that way. You get the idea. All right. So now, is there any significance there? Is there any significance in that using different words? Everyone will try to sit there and make all the distinction. Now, some will try to say, well, the one kind of love, Jesus is basically, now this is the way it's usually preached. Do you have kind of a God-like love for me, right? And Peter is like, no, I have a phileo love for you, which they say is much less. Now, you can look at the definition for the words and how each is used to see if you see a clear distinction there, because you'd have to go through all the usage. Again, phileo is used 25 times. If we go back, the other one was used over 100 times, if I remember correctly. I don't want to give you wrong information here. We go back to where it is. Where is it? There it is. The other one is used 142 times.
Strong's G25, agapao, agapao.
Agapao is used 142 times. You would have to draw a distinction. Now, why is this important? Well, not only is it important trying to understand what's going on in John 21, but you see where this is leading. I think you can see where this is leading. When we get to 1 John and we're told not to love the world, is it not love the world with an agapao love or a phileo love? Like, in other words, okay, when I'm told not to love the world, I'm not to love the world with a certain kind of love, agapao or phileo. Is there a difference there? Does that even make a difference? Well, all of the arguments about the different kinds of love start right here in John chapter 21. Agapao or phileo? Agapao or phileo? Which is it? Does it matter? Now, yeah, I know what you're saying. Well, let's go to John 2 and look it up. Well, let's wait. Let's stay in John 21 and see how this plays out as we work through this discussion between Jesus and Peter and see how it plays out. All right, so let's go back. That's John 21:15. Now let's go to John 21:16. John 21:16. All right, he saith to him again the second time, Simon of Jonas, lovest thou me? And what word does he ask him again? What word do you think it is? It's this word.
Strong's G25, agapao, agapao.
It's agapao again. So Jesus says, hey, Peter, do you agapao me? Peter's like, I phileo, right? So then Jesus asks a second time, Peter, do you agapao me? And what does Peter say? Well, so agapao, he says it again, all right? The same one that we've already looked at. Peter, let's go back to verse 16 now. Peter says this time, all right, we're going to find it here. You know that I love you. And he says this.
Strong's G5368, phileo. Phileo.
He's like, no, I phileo you. Agapao or phileo? Two times. Jesus is like, hey, agapao me, I phileo. Agapao, phileo. Now, why is Peter using a different word? Why? Now, a common idea is that Jesus is saying, hey, do you really love me like this? Agapao being like the highest form of love. And Peter's like, Lord, you know I phileo. In other words, Peter's unwilling to say agapao. He's unwilling to go to that level. That's how most interpret that. Is that accurate or is that true? Just stay with me. All right. Now, that's 25 verse 15, 25 verse 16. Now, verse 25 verse 17. He saith unto him a third time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Now, what happens in verse 17? All right. He says a second time, lovest thou me. Now look at what Jesus does here. This is interesting, right? He says to a third time, do you lovest thou me? And look what Greek word Jesus uses this time. He uses this Greek word. if I can get it to play.
Strong's G5368. Phileo.
Now Jesus changes. First two times, agapao. Now this time it's phileo. Now Jesus changed the words. Now this is one of those things in the text that I know some preachers say people make too much a big deal out of it. It's nothing. But all I'm saying is you can look at the actual Greek words being used and you have to at least ask the question, what's going on here? Two times agapao and then all of a sudden phileo. Hey, Peter, do you agapao me? Do you agapeo me? No, I phileo. I phileo. And then Jesus like, okay, do you phileo? All right. And look what Peter says in this verse, all right? Verse 17, all right? So we look at it. He saith unto him the third time, Simon of Jonas, lovest thou me? Phileo. He was grieved, and Peter is grieved because he said unto him the third time, lovest thou me? Phileo, right? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I love thee, phileo. Now, there's something going on here. There's something significant going on here. Jesus clearly, he starts off two times asking one way, and then Jesus on the third time goes to phileo, and then Peter is grieved and says, yes, Lord, I phileo. Now, why? Is there any significance here? Again, I'm going to play them for you one more time because I want you to really get this down. All right? I want you to really get this down because I think it's so very important. All right? So I want you to write these two words down for love because I think they're very important. The first one is
Strong's G25, agapao, agapao,
agapao. Now, why I want you to write agapao down. Again, it is if the transliteration is A-G-A-P-A-O, agapao, agapao. Now, a lot of people will write it out as agape, but agapao, I just want to make sure we know exactly how it's typically stated, all right? Agapao is just to try to be as accurate as we can be, all right? I'm not going to argue against saying agape, but agapao is the word, all right? And I'm doing this over and over and over and over so that you get this down, all right? Agapao. Now, why is this important, all right? Well, here we've got to figure out what in the world's going on. Is Jesus like agapao me? Do you agapao me? And Peter can just say phileo, phileo, and then finally Jesus like, okay, do you phileo me? Yes, Lord, I phileo you. All right, so. Agapao seems to be this level of love that Peter cannot even bring himself to say that he has that kind of love. Peter seems unwilling to even say that. So then Jesus finally says, okay, do you have this other kind of love for me? And Peter seems to say, yes, I have that level of love. That's the way it reads. It's hard to get around it. There's agapao, right? Agapao, and then the other word that you need to have written down, the other Greek word is this, and it's right here. It's phileo.
Strong's G5368. Phileo. Phileo.
All right. Phileo, and it is a transliteration is P-H-I-L-E-O. P-H-I-L-E-O is the transliteration. So agapao or phileo. Agapao or phileo, agapao or phileo. Now, those are the two kinds of love. Now, here, Jesus first tries to get Peter, do you agapao me? No, phileo, phileo. Then Jesus finally says, do you phileo me? And Peter then can acknowledge that. So that seems to indicate that these are two different kinds of love. That at least that's what seems to be indicated in this dialogue. That seems to be indicated in this dialogue because it's just interesting that it's using two different Greek words. Now, some people will say, no, the words are interchangeably. So basically all that's happening is Jesus like, do you love me? You know I love you. Do you love me? You know I love you. Do you love me? Yes, Lord, I love you. That even though different Greek words are being used, there's no intent in drawing a distinction between the two different Greek words. Some people say that that's just preachers making that up, that in reality there's no that they're used interchangeably. The only way to know that is you'd have to look up every occurrence of agapao, every occurrence of phileo, and then see if they're used in any kind of an interchangeable way. And if you say they are, then all that's happening here is Jesus is just asking him three times, do you love me? That's all he's doing. And by the third time, Peter was grieved because he said unto him, lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I love thee. And he said, feed my sheep. So if these words are just interchangeable, all that's happening is Jesus is asking Peter three times, do you love me? To correspond to the three times he denied him. That's all he's doing. If there's this correlation between agapao, or this difference between agapao and phileo, then Jesus is trying to say, do you love me this much? And Peter can't bring himself to say that, but he can say he loves him this much. Now, if there is a distinction, then this becomes very important. Because when it says love not the world, is the idea that we don't love the world in a certain way or at a certain kind of level. So here's what we're going to do. Let's now take the blue letter. There's agapao, there's phileo. Now let's go to 1 John 2. I'm going to take the blue letter Bible app. I'm going to go to 1 John and let's see what happens here. All right. Now I haven't even read the whole email, but you'll see here in a minute. All right. Now look what happens here. Look at the Greek word that's used for love, not the world, in 1 John chapter 2, verse 15. Do you want to take a guess? Do you want to take a guess which word is being used in 1 John 2? Come on, what do you think? Love, not the world. What love do you think is being talked about here? It happens to be this one.
Strong's G25, agapao, agapao.
Agapao. So love not the world in an agapao way. If there is a distinction, then that's where we have to ask ourselves, okay, I can love the things in the world at a phileo level, but I cannot love the things in the world in an agapao level. If there is a distinction there, then this really makes sense because agapao is used in 1 John 2 verse 15. Now I'm going to look here. Let's see, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, it's used twice in verse 15. Let's see if it's used both times. Love not the world. Yeah, and the next time it's used in 1 John is agapao. Let's see here. For all that is in the world passeth away. All right, yeah. So agapao is what's used, or you could argue it's basically do not love the world with an agape, with an agapao kind of love. That's the kind of love you have to avoid. You have to stay away from. So you can phileo the world. You can't agapao the world. Now, is there a distinction? Now, I'm going to go back to the email. Right? Here's the email. All right? Now, I'm just now listening to your broadcast from last night. Before I get going on this, it led me to just a general question on the different Greek words translated as love. Some preachers make a big deal of that. Others have dedicated entire sermons to pointing out that they're used interchangeably, and you shouldn't give so much notice to it. For instance, you've probably noticed towards the end of John, when Jesus asked Peter if he loves him, they go back and forth three times. Jesus used agapao, the email says agape, the first two times. And Peter always responds with phileo. The third time Jesus asks the question, he uses phileo in his question instead of agape. Is there something to that, or are we letting it be a distraction from the main point? I've heard preachers say both. Now, so I ask that before I chase a rabbit unnecessarily. Should we consider the type of love being used in 1 John 2, which is agape or agapao? If it had been phileo instead, would it change our view of what this means not to love the world? I know this means you're going to tell me to do a word study on each time they're used all throughout the New Testament. Phileo 25 times, agape or agapao 142 times. John uses phileo several times in the Gospel of John, but never in the three epistles. like looks like he uses agapao or agape many times in 1 John, like 17 times. Now, is there a distinction? The only way to be dogmatic about this is we have to look up all the occurrences of agapao and all of the occurrences of phileo and see, is there a true distinction in these kinds of love? If they are, then what we have to do is then incorporate that and transport it to 1 John. And when it says love, not the world, we have to figure out agapao, what that love looks like. And that's the kind of love we cannot have for the world. It's not condemning the phileo kind of love. It's condemning the agapao kind of love. We have to have a clear definition of what the agapao kind of love is. Now, I'm going to do something really quick. I didn't even think about this. I got the Bible dictionary here, Nelson's New Illustrated Bible Dictionary. I'm going to go through this. I'm going to look here. I'm going to read this. So, love. Page 775 in the Bible Dictionary. Two distinct Greek words meaning to love appear in the Bible. The word phileo means to have ardent affection and feeling, a type of impulsive love. So phileo, according to the dictionary, is to have an ardent affection and feeling, a type of impulsive love. Agapao means to have esteem or high regard. In the memorable conversation between Jesus and Peter, there is a play upon two words. The warm word, agape, or agapao, is the characteristic term of Christianity. The word for love is used several different ways in the Bible. Agape, or agapao, indicates a nature of the love of God towards his beloved Son, towards the human race, and towards those who believe on the Lord Jesus Christ. Agape or agapao, love conveys God's will to his children about their attitude towards one another. Love for one another was the proof of the world of true discipleship. Agape or agapao, love also expressed the essential nature of God. Love can be known only from the action it prompts, as seen in God's love, love and the gift of his Son. Love found its perfect expression in the Lord Jesus. Christian love is the fruit of the Spirit, of Jesus and the believer. Love is like oil to the will of obedience. It enables us to run the way of God's commandments. Without such love, we are as nothing. Such Spirit-inspired love never fails, but always flourishes. So they draw a distinction between phileo and agapao. Now, the distinction they make, let me read it to you again. Phileo means to have ardent affection and feeling, a type of impulsive love. So I could look at the world, if we go with this distinction, and I could have an ardent affection and feeling and an impulsive love for the world and would not be sinning. If this is true, I could not have agapao kind of love for the world. Because this world, that kind of love, agapao, means to have high esteem or high regard. It's a love that would be very, the highest kind of love. I guess the only way to describe it, a God-like kind of love, the love that God calls for, the love that God demonstrates. It's God's kind of love. I cannot have God's kind of love for the world because, well, then at that point, that's the love that would be reserved for God. But just remember, you got to be careful how we state this, because Peter himself obviously could not love God. Even he couldn't acknowledge that he loved God with an agapao kind of love. He could only say he loved Jesus with a phileo love, and Jesus accepted that. If there is a distinction, Now, that does that demonstrate Jesus' mercy and understanding of our lack of ability? Does that demonstrate that we can never truly love God with an agapao kind of love? Is it even possible for us to love God with an agapao kind of love? We can only reach a phileo level. If there's a distinction, that's a possibility. But what's interesting is when it comes to loving the world, we cannot have an agapao kind of love for the world. We can only have a phileo love if there is a distinction. This is very important how we interpret that whole 1 John 2, love not the world concept. So it's saying love not the world. Agapao, do not have that kind of love. It's not condemning the phileo kind of love. Now, that the problem with that, at least allows me some cape possibility, right? Okay, there's a chance then that I could possibly not love the world with an agapao kind of love, but that the phileo kind of love would be present and it would be there. So what do we do with this? What do we do with this? I've tried to walk you all the way through this to the best of my ability. And I got thrown off because the email says agape and then agapao. Okay. So if I mess any of those up, I apologize. But I just want to make sure we go with, you know, the way it's actually pronounced in any Greek tools. Agapao is the way it is. And I know everyone says agape, and that's okay. But agapao, I just want you to see how it actually sounds. That's the reason I did that, all right? Because I want us to be as correct as we can be. I haven't spent a lot of time with this because obviously I was busy today, but it allows at least some sense of feeling like, okay, I think I can avoid an agapao kind of love to the world. I think I can, and because I know there's a phileo level of love, if there's a distinction here. But what bothers me is when I go back to John 21, why would Jesus accept, if there's a distinction here? I mean, you've got to ask this question. If there really is a distinction, why does Jesus accept the phileo kind of love? Why does he accept that answer? Does that demonstrate mercy, grace? Does that demonstrating an understanding of that we're incapable of something? I think that's a very important question to ask ourselves, all right? So I want you to do a little work on this and see what you come up with, right? The first test, right? I'm just going to go through this again. Here's your test, right? I'm going to go back to the Blue Letter Bible app because this is how, this won't take you long to do this, but this is going to be your job, all right? I'm going to go back to John 21. I'm going to go back to verse 15. That's where it all starts. After they dined, then Jesus, you know, says to Simon Peter, you know, Simon of Jonas, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Which is this Greek word.
Strong's G25, agapao, agapao.
Agapao. Now, this, it's used 142 times. Now, they're all listed right here in the Blue Letter Bible app. That's the wonderful thing about this tool. Go through all 142 and just kind of get a basic idea of the kind of love that agapao is referring to. When you're reading these words, try to just summarize. This is the kind of love agapao seems to be. All right. That's pretty simple. Right. Then you've got them all listed right here. All 142. All right. All right. There's a lot we could do here, but they're all listed. They're all listed. All right. Now you're going to have to just scroll through them and you can just kind of, you don't have to write down something for each verse, but you're just kind of looking and trying to get the general sense I get by reading all the verses where agapao is used. Here's how I would describe this kind of love. Then go back, John chapter 21, verse 15, click on 15, then go pull up the interlinear, go back down to where Simon Peter says, he says, I love thee, but not agapao. When he says, I love thee, he says, phileo, right? And it's used 25 times, right? I could play it again, but I won't. And just look at all the times it's used. And then again, summarize. And all you need on your paper is just, here's my summary of agapao. Here's my summary of phileo. All right. Now, if you believe that there is a clear distinction, if you can identify a clear distinction, then take that distinction and carry it over to 1 John and says, okay, in 1 John, when it tells me not to love the world, this is the kind of love I cannot have for the world. Agapao, I cannot have that kind of love for the world. Then you at least have somewhere to start, somewhere to go. Okay, what does it look like not to love the world? It means I do not have an agapao kind of love for the world. Phileo may be present, and it appears that it's not condemned. Agapao kind of love is condemned. I mean, obviously, you can have a phileo love for now. That the fact that Jesus accepts the phileo love to me is just. I'm trying to wrap my mind around that because you would think, well, Jesus is truly the Son of God. You're like, no, you have to agapao me. You have to. But for some reason, Jesus shows some kind of mercy and acceptance of it, unless there's no real distinction. Are we forcing a distinction where there is no distinction? If there is no distinction, then Jesus says, do you love me? Yes, I love you. Do you love me? Yes, I love you. Do you love me? Man, yes, Lord, I love you. Okay, you're good to go. I just wanted to verify that you love me. And then there's no distinction between agapeo and phileo. There's no distinction. But if there is a distinction, then that distinction would be important in 1 John, where clearly it says, do not agapeo the world. Do not do that. And you can like, okay, all right, that's the highest form of love. As long as I have a different kind of love for the world, I'm not in sin. But if there is no distinction, then any level of love, agapao or phileo, would both be wrong. So is there a distinction or not a distinction? That's what I need you to figure out. All right? I hope that makes sense. I hope it does. If you need me to repeat any of this, if you're listening live, just jump into the chat really quick and tell me. If you have any problems by listening to this later, just email me. newsif@yahoo.com, newsif@yahoo.com. That's newsif@yahoo.com, newsif@yahoo.com. And I hope that worked. I do. So when you're sitting here in an empty room, like if everyone was here, then, you know, it feels different when you try to work through something like this. But when you're sitting here in an empty room, you're just in your mind, you're like, okay, I think that worked, maybe, hopefully. And one of the things that I failed to do is I forgot to bring a bottle of water. So, and I desperately need water right now, but that's okay. All right. Agapao, phileo. All right. Now, you know the two words. Get to work. And tell me what you find, right? Again, you don't have to write something for every verse, just all the verses, agapao, if I can say the word correctly, and phileo. Just look up all the verses that use those different Greek words for love and then summarize what do you think they seem to say. If a clear distinction doesn't jump out at you, like you're like, whoa, clearly these words are different. If they don't jump out that way, then we cannot force a distinction. I mean, to me, if there's a distinction, it should be abundantly clear. I'm not saying it's not abundantly clear. I'm just saying you shouldn't have to sit there and go, well, I'm not so sure. Maybe a little bit. No, if it's clear, it'll be like, oh, obviously. Look at how agapeo is used here and look at how phileo. I mean, they're completely different. And once you see the distinction, then we can talk about bringing that distinction to 1 John. But let's see what you find. All right, there we go. This is not chasing a rabbit. This is absolutely important to trying to figure out what's going on in 1 John 2:15. And I look forward to your discovery and what you find and your discussion. Email me newsif@yahoo.com. All right, everyone have a wonderful evening. God bless.